Welcome to Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. Each week, we explore down and dirty ways to stop awfulizing, catastrophizing, going down the rabbit hole, and moving through all the craziness that is happening right now. We're here to create a community of like-minded people as we give you tips, tricks, and techniques for keeping sane in an unhinged world. And now, here are your hosts, Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg.
Hey, everybody. This is Scott Grossberg, one of your co-hosts for the podcast, Keeping Your Shit Together in a Stressed World. And I'm here with my co-host, Michelle Post. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Scott. How are you today?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm a bit tired. We'll get to that.
Okay.
I'm fessing up to everybody on the air. Because it's one of the first things they tell you as a performer and entertainer. It's like, don't tell them you're tired. Because performers are always tired.
I know, but this is keeping your shit together in a stressed world. Like, it's helpful for us to let people see behind the curtain.
So behind the curtain, Scott's tired today.
Yeah.
And I'll explain why as we get into it.
Okay. I'm here to help you, Scott.
Thank you. Actually, I'll just sleep. You pick up the flack.
Talk about stress and the art of improvisation. I'm ready. Yes, and.
We do want to thank everybody. We're at over 9,600 plays now. And I know we've had a big surge on Spotify. For those of you on Spotify, thank you for listening. Yes. And a quick reminder, I will usually do it at the end of the show, but a quick reminder now. We do appreciate all of you sharing and liking and subscribing on your favorite podcast platform because it helps us. It helps the show grow. This is Michelle's and my passion project, for lack of a better way to put it. And there's no compensation for this other than the engagement we have with our audience. So thank you guys for continuing forward. Before we jump into our topic today, what do you want to talk about?
Well, I want to thank you. I know you just thanked our audience, but I want to thank you for all that you do behind the scenes to keep our podcast going, you know, for downloading it, for uploading it, for creating our graphics. Like this, I want to talk about the power of peer support because I started a new group of therapists, peer support therapists this morning before you and I are recording. But it also occurred to me right in this moment how powerful it's been to have you as peer support. And I know we record this and other people listen to it, but it really helps me get through some really dark times.
Well, thank you. But I think people know this. You and I actually, even though we're not clients of each other,
right,
we're friends, but it's deeper than that, right? I've had some challenges lately, and Michelle has seen the dark and twisty Scott,
and you've seen the dark and twisty Michelle,
and it's nice to be able to it's certainly a deep friendship. We were friends before we did this,
yes,
but it's that peer thing.
I so deeply trust you.
It's that vice versa. And it's that peer thing. Even my wife has periodically said, you know, if something is going on, why don't you ask Michelle about that? Or why don't we ask Michelle about that? That's the level at which we have this. So when you talk about, I'm fascinated by the peer concept because I run a mastermind group as well Tuesday.
Yes.
And I'm curious because it sounds like you...
Shepherded. I orchestrated it.
You orchestrated this. Uh-huh. What was the purpose behind it? What's in it for you?
What's in it for me? So I am a member of a peer supervision group with my mentor who is turning, I think today is his birthday. Happy birthday, Dr. Warden. He's turning 91 today, October 23rd.
Happy birthday.
And last year, anybody that was listening to us for this length of time, we had trekked out to Southern California to attend his 90th birthday party. And I've been a part of his peer supervision group where he's the leader and we pay him a nominal fee to run it. It's not very much, but those of us that aren't him, we pay him. And we meet once a month and we've been meeting on Zoom since the pandemic, but I just passed, I think, my 18th year anniversary of being a member of this group of Southern California Bereavement Specialists. And it's been a really powerful helper for me in my career to keep my skills fresh, to be aware of the research anyway. But because we've all gone online, we hadn't added new members for a really long time because all of our alumni around the country that had moved out of Southern California have now kind of rejoined. Many of us have rejoined the group. So the group is really big. And I had this person, I had two people that I knew from Dee Dee Hirsch's suicide support group or suicides intervention and prevention center in Los Angeles, two colleagues of mine from that experience periodically would reach out to me and say like, oh, I'd really love to join the warden group and blah, blah, blah. And so I've always had them in mind. And finally I thought, oh my goodness, you know, sooner or later I may lose the warden group because he's 91 years old and he might retire or might not be able to lead anymore. I need to start another group to help me continue on in my career. And so today, just this morning, was our very first meeting. And we want to each invite one more colleague to join us so that we start off with a group of six. And we already were exchanging tech support ideas and ideas about where to get referrals and ideas about where to do our continued education that's required in California. And then we were also talking about, you know, when you're a therapist, and I know you ethically, Scott, as a coach, do not talk about your client content of your clients with anyone. That's not necessarily a rule. And, you know, it's not like required by law to keep things confidential. But as a lawyer, you know, you had a lot of cases you weren't allowed to talk about with anybody. And so you become this container of secrets.
Right.
As a therapist or as an issue. And there's a lot of emotion that you go through with your clients as you're helping them. And having a good outlet for that keeps your own well-being, mental health going. And so what I get out of it is just idea exchange, emotional support, education, tips and tools, you know, like the same things we're passing along to our clients. You know, there's very specific ones around licensed therapists that you can benefit from. So I am super excited that we are starting our first peer support group meeting.
It's wonderful.
This morning,
I got to tell you, it's funny, as you were talking about being this container of secrets, I know that as a lawyer, there's, you know, attorney-client confidentiality, and you've got that therapist-patient confidence. The reality is, as a magician, I'm a container of secrets as well.
You are?
And the Magic Castle here in Hollywood, I have made some very, very dear friends.
Yeah.
And you don't, as a creator, create in a vacuum. And because nobody wants to know how the magic is done.
No,
they want to watch
how the sausage is made.
They want that, right? And so it's the very much the same. And I've been able to, over the past few days, because I've been performing out there, been able to share with some very dear friends. We'll call them secrets, but it's that same support group where it's going to sound like I'm bragging, but it's not. Performers at a certain level.
Yes.
Right. Once you get to a certain level, it's like there are just not that many of us.
No, there aren't that many. Right. Same with therapists.
To be able to share the deep esoteric, nuanced subtleties of what you want to do. And you create constantly. So I create constantly. And it's almost like you're bursting to share this stuff. Very much similar, by the way, when I'm working with my folks in the tarot and fortune telling fields.
Wow.
It's again, yeah, most people have a tarot deck or they've seen a tarot deck or whatever. Very few people understand the nuances of what a deck contains.
Yeah.
And so there are people that I do like what you're doing now that I put together and we share and things like that. So very cool that you're doing that. And
yeah.
I want to remark quickly because I've talked about this, I believe, on the show before, but I certainly talk about it with my live audiences when I'm brought in to talk about team building and the like. I think most people have heard of Napoleon Hill and the mastermind concept, mm-hmm. Which he claims that he got from Andrew Carnegie and this collection of people. What I don't think most people realize is that the precise thing, the precise group that Michelle is talking about actually goes back even further than Napoleon Hill. And I've always loved, if people are interested, go look up the Junto, J-U-N-T-O, which was also called the Leather Apron Club by Benjamin Franklin. And Benjamin Franklin put together what he called it was a club for mutual improvement.
I love it.
And it was beautiful. I mean, when you look and see what he did, and I'm looking at the date here, 1727, this group was established by Benjamin Franklin. And it's
a club for mutual improvement.
A club for mutual improvement. And it's fascinating when you realize how far back these go. His group was originally 12 people. And it literally was just a gathering where they would, in his case, drink and discuss. You don't have to drink, obviously, in yours. But it was all designed to take you to the next level. And I'm going to leave it with this before we move into the show today. But this is Benjamin Franklin's words now. I had formed most of my ingenious acquaintances into a club of mutual improvement. And I love the concept of ingenious acquaintances. That's what you've done. You've put together.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So that's what I'm in the process of doing. Like, I was lucky enough to get grandfathered in to the Southern California Bereavement Specialist Group. And it is a group of genius companions in the world of bereavement, death, dying, and bereavement. And I love that group.
Perfect.
Dr. Warden calls us his group of doctors, even though most of us are not doctors. Some of us are, but most of us are not, but he calls us his group of doctors.
That's very funny. All right. Shall we move into today's show? Cause it's going to be a fun one. Today we're talking about improv and how improvisation skills can aid you in stress management. Mm-hmm. And I know both of us have a background in that. I know for me, you know, I've got a minor degree in theater arts. I actually, as part of my schooling, wound up teaching acting classes. And you have to, if you're going to teach these things, study improv. I am a huge, unbelievably huge fan of Whose Line Is It Anyway, the TV show here in the United States, just because I love watching these people and the improv masterful performances that they bring to the table. Obviously, a lot of the way that I work as a magician and fortune teller, a lot of improv comes to the table in order to keep my sanity. Mm-hmm. You've got to be able to handle those. And I'm curious, Michelle, you like improv, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Obviously. Yeah. I also big fan of Whose Line Is It Anyway? What a great show that is. And when you work with a bunch of people in Hollywood, like I do in my private practice, you know, you can't really turn around without bumping into somebody that has improv training. And it's really, it's powerful. It's great for staying present. It's helpful in, I think, workplace meetings, learning how to roll it's a great problem solving skill. Improvisation is all problem solving. We've got a new problem. We need to improvise, right? Oh, our solution didn't work. Well, let's figure out something else.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's those of you with a jazz music background will understand this. Because periodically in magic, by the way, we call it jazzing when you're actually doing magic and improving at the same time. And those of you in jazz music know that you just get together with other jazz musicians and you riff, right? It's in the moment, as Michelle was talking about. But more importantly, at least the way I use improv, you're talking about plot development, character development, dialogue, having fun, and the game of it all. And it's literally instantaneous. You have no freaking idea.
Can't plan for it.
Walking into it. And the great part about improv, and this is what I've brought to my own life skills and what I work with my clients on, you can't plan for what the scene is that you're doing or the show is that you're doing or the interaction with the audience that you're doing, but you can plan for the tools you use.
Yes.
And I think the key to improv is getting so comfortable with the skill set that then you just, it's like last night I was talking to the audience, and I got to tell you, I'm doing 8 nights of, I use the F word, fortune telling at the Magic Castle for the first time ever in their 60-year history. It's a stage show. And it's gallery readings. Now, gallery readings require them to ask a question and me to answer the question. Wow. I got to be in the moment, right? Now, this is also the Halloween run at the castle.
Wow.
The audience has to ask questions.
Wow.
They're in costume. And honest to God, into one of the shows last night come two mimes.
Two mimes. Okay. Coming in for a reading. Two mimes come in for a reading. Sounds like a joke.
And now here comes the silliest part of it. The mimes are coming in and they're waving and they're doing their little mime things, and neither of them is saying a word. And it's like, how the hell am I going to do that? Now, have you ever spoken to someone who doesn't speak your language naturally? We as Americans are notorious.
Yes.
When we get somebody that's like that, what do? We talk slower
and
louder, right?
Yes.
You know what Scott did last night to a mime?
What?
I started doing sign language, and it's like all of a sudden I caught myself and went, wait a minute. You can hear me, but I don't know why suddenly I'm doing the whole little sign language.
Like when somebody whispers on the other end of the phone and you find yourself whispering on your end of the phone.
Yeah. So, you know, I caught myself and then we went into it. By the way, the mimes did wind up asking questions. When you do things like that, you have to have enough skill set that I can say to them, go ahead, bring it on. I've done this for so many years. Take your best shot. And I think that's I think that's the approach that we want listeners today to bring to their own stressful situations. So I actually went on, if you don't mind, I went online. There are rules of improv, by the way. And if you watch a good improv group, you will see them implement all of these rules at one time or another through the night. I happen to pull up a very nice set from the Pan Theater. They have the list of their rules for improv. And I'm going to give you the first 10 of them, if you don't mind, because they're directly translatable to human life, the human condition. The first is, and we've said this on the show before, learn to say yes and all the time. It's the concept of agreement. That's really what this is. If you walk into a scene, you walk into a show, you walk into an interaction as an improv artist, and it's like, okay, how can I say no every step of the way? There will be no show.
There's no show.
So whatever is thrown at you, and a lot of the times in an improv show, you're waiting for the audience to give you suggestions for the scene, the dialogue, the characters, and the props. Mm-hmm. Or like you watch on Whose Line Is It Anyway, the performers get a box of these god-awful props, and they've got to go with it. Nobody, you've never seen anybody. Maybe Wayne Brady has stood up and just laughed his ass off because he's looking at whatever this is, but you've never seen anybody pull out a prop and go, yeah, I'm not using that.
Exactly. Right? They don't say no.
So it's yes. And the other thing that the second rule is always be willing to take the input and make sure you're adding to new information to it.
Okay.
Now that requires you, by the way, to be fully present. We'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
So the first is say yes. So it's yes and. That's the any improv people who are listening, as soon as I say yes and,
yes and,
you know what it is. Mm-hmm. Then add new information.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, don't block. Don't be an obstacle to the people who are part of the conversation.
Oh yeah.
Don't set them up to fail. Set them up to succeed. You have to do that.
That is so applicable to any working relationship, yeah, or work environment or home life. Don't be a block. Don't be a stumbling block to people. That's a biblical scripture. Don't be a stumbling block to someone else's spiritual path or spiritual growth. Right. Don't block someone else's ambition or goals or
maybe we'll rename our podcast. We'll call it Don't Be a Block.
Don't be a block. Yep. So applicable.
Yeah. Number four is avoid asking questions. And I know that's so counterintuitive. Oh. That's so but there's an exception. It's okay. So counterintuitive to what you and I are always pushing out there. It's like, get more data, get more metrics, get more information, yes, know your thing. So here's the difference. Okay. You don't ask questions. You're not interrogating the people unless you're using it to add new information or more information to the situation.
Okay.
In other words, it's not out of idle curiosity.
Okay.
You're asking for a specific reason.
Okay.
So if someone throws out and says, there's a fire in the trash can, I may want to say, okay, who started the fire?
To get more information.
Because then I could, if they tell me, you don't know. Now I walk, right? That's different than saying, well, your wife started the fire because, she wanted to smoke you out of the house. That's a whole, it's two different scenes.
Okay. Makes sense.
So there's that. And then, you know, number five, this is something that you were talking about, but we've talked about in the show a lot. And that's play, big quotes, play. Play in the present and use the moment.
Yeah.
How many of us, when we find ourselves stressed or activated or triggered, we're not playing in the present. We're playing in the past or the future.
So true.
And, you know, I love, by the way, one of the things I do in my Magic Castle performance is I take people on a guided journey. Again, unheard of, right? I'm not doing card tricks. I'm not sawing people in half. I'm taking them on inner journeys. And I had somebody, I was lecturing to some of the members about my show and giving them some of the ins and outs of it. And one of the members raised their hand and said, but what if you can't visualize?
And? Right?
Well, here's the interesting thing.
Yes, that's tough.
It's not.
No.
Because I run into people who tell me they can't visualize things. And yet I'll say to them, do you worry at all about anything? Yes. Well, you can't worry unless you can visualize.
Visualize, because you have to be thinking about the future and what a potential issue is in the future.
Mm. So anybody who's listening to this show who has ever worried, fretted, stressed, you know how to visualize. Mm-hmm. The difference is now, can you visualize in the present? Can you visualize in the moment? And can you play with it? Again, I know this is true for me. I know that when I stress, it's because I usually awfulize.
Okay.
I project into the future. I don't do too much of the past stuff, but I do a lot of the future dark and twisty Wow. That's what I did for 40 years as a lawyer, right?
Right.
I was paid to have nightmares for my clients. I got really good at it.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, I'm guessing in your therapy sessions, isn't that much the same? You have to keep bringing people back to where are you right now?
Yes, very, very much. We have to bring people back to where they are right now. I guess the and is we also look for the roots from the past. I do, at least in my therapy, the roots from the past that can be influencing the present moment. So, you know, where did they learn things? Where did they? Yeah.
So that brings us to rule number six.
Oh.
Which is establish the location, right? Uh-huh. Where are you? How did you get there?
Uh-huh.
You know, how many of us, I've used this term before. Let me find the exact quote because it's wonderful.
Establish the location. How did you get there?
Yeah, I want to just find the quote. It's oh heck, I can't find it right now. But it's an author who basically said, I'm going to use me as the example here. Scott lived 6 feet outside his body. I mean, how many of us? And I can tell you that in times of extreme stress, sometimes I feel like I'm watching myself. Right? It's like that. It's like that little disassociation. Mm-hmm. Now that's under extreme situations.
Uh-huh.
Extreme stress. It's like, oh my God, I can see myself doing this. Establish your location. Know where you are. That's part of being present. And I'll even go one step further. I've likened our life journeys to using GPS in your car or on your mobile device. You can't get anywhere unless you put in a destination. And there's a big and you understand where you are. There's no way to use GPS unless it has at least the coordinates of where you are and where you want to go so that it can route you to where you're going to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, isn't the worst when GPS is wrong? It's giving you directions
yesterday. And here's the bloody madness of it. Yesterday, driving into the castle, I'm looking at it because you can see, particularly I use Waze periodically. On Waze, it gives you the route in advance with the turn by turn overview. And I'm looking at it going, why the heck is it getting me off here? I know this. I'm not getting off there. That's it. Blah, 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 blah. And it's like, okay, I'm going to ignore the directions.
Uh-huh.
I know my way into the castle. This was just a failsafe for me.
Okay.
Come up, going around the curve on the freeway. There's the off ramp it wants me to get off on. I say, to hell with it. I know where I'm going. I know better.
Uh-huh.
Go past the off ramp, and honest to God, traffic stopped. And they had closed down 3 freaking lanes of the freeway.
Oh, that's why it was sending you a different direction.
Yep. Now, you know how when you do GPS, it will then go rerouting, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
It should have. It didn't. It should have come back and said, dumb shit, I told you to get off. Now you're going to sit here for an extra 30 minutes.
I know.
Right. And so, again, establish your location so that you know not only where you are, but where you're going.
Yes. Yeah. Likewise, the GPS thing, the tricky part is sometimes it is wrong about where it thinks mm-hmm. you are, right? So that's likewise as frustrating is when it's telling you to turn right, thinking you're headed south on a street, when you're headed north on the street, and those directions don't apply.
Yeah, well, there's that. And certainly, again, down in the Magic Castle is right around the corner from the Hollywood Bowl. Mm-hmm. And when there are events at the Hollywood Bowl.
That's wild.
Right? GPS tries to reroute me. And sometimes it has me going in a loop.
Yes.
It's like, seriously, right? You get off the loop. You get off the loop.
Establish your location.
Establish your location. All right. Number 7. And this one I love. And that's when you're doing your responses, be specific. And every good performer, provide colorful details. and I'm going to use show business as an example. I tell my people that I lecture to, this is show business, not tell business. I mean, how many people are listeners? You guys don't even like to be told things. You like us to take you on a journey with you, or with us, and provide colorful details. That's, I think that's why we have the audience, is that we're adding the color commentary, for lack of a better way.
Mm-hmm.
Rule number 8. This is a biggie. Change. Right. So you take
that's
in
the rule. Change.
That's it. You take info. That. You take info. You modify it. Right. You know how to. This is play. This is that we're avoiding the stress of the instantaneous moment by playing. We're literally having fun with it.
Yeah.
And so one of the things, and this kind of leads into the last 2 points, I had mentioned before the whole concept of use the difficulty, right? From Michael Caine.
Yes.
I mentioned it in the last podcast episode.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Caine made this brilliant assessment of, I mean, the man's in his 90s now, I believe. And he's now retiring from acting, but he does these little daily Michael Caine life tips.
Oh, how fun.
And they're really quite brilliant. And he was remarking about being in a live theater production, and the husband and wife actors in the scene had thrown a chair. Like, I think it was the husband had thrown a chair, and the chair got lodged in the doorway that Michael Caine was supposed to enter into the scene with.
Mm-hmm.
But he couldn't get through the doorway,
uh-huh,
because the chair was now in there, and he didn't know what to do. Whereupon the senior actor, I mean, they stopped. The senior actor came over and he said, use the difficulty. Mm-hmm. If it's a comedy, fall over the chair as you enter the room.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a drama, unwedge the chair and smash it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Get
mm-hmm.
angry.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, it's a great way of saying, put your own little twist on it. Change mm-hmm. things. Mm-hmm. Use what you're given. And use the difficulty to get you where you need to go.
Mm.
I mean, that's one of the best lessons you can have for life, frankly.
Absolutely. We in therapy have a concept of the wounded healer, which is all about using the difficulties that you've overcome in your own life, your lived experience, to help your clients navigate through the difficulties they're experiencing. Now, we do so very subtly.
Right.
We don't make the session about ourselves. We don't talk all about our own problems. Like, a good therapist is not going to talk about their own problems, but they're going to ask questions to help guide, Socratic questioning, to help guide the client through the difficulty, because using the difficulty also means that you have hope for the end. Right. So you've been through it. You've gotten through it. You can just hold hope that your own client can get through this difficulty too. And that's a powerful mindset and intention to have.
And I think, the personal aspect of this, I mean, we've both practiced, I think, the same approach to working with clients, and you and I have done this with each other. Where I don't think we make it about us, mm-hmm. but we do share personal stories,
mm-hmm.
for lack of a better way of saying it than just to let each other know, hey, Michelle, mm-hmm. you're not crazy.
You're not alone.
I've been here too.
Yeah, I've been here too. I relate to it. You're going to be okay. That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Use the difficulty.
Because sometimes if we don't improv our way out of the stress,
mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, also means that this isn't one of the rules, but I'm going to let everybody know, this also means giving yourself permission.
Yeah.
To breathe. To give it. It's like if you're sad, you're angry, you're happy, you're joyous, you're delirious, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, I love Pema Chodron's approach to lean into it. And if you're going to feel that way, then just freaking feel that way. Take it on for the whole world and then be done with it.
Yeah. And it works to the positive too. So I'm going to give some accolades to my partner, Brian. On Saturday, we had plans to go watch the Blue Angels perform at the beach.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I haven't seen them in a while.
I know. And they were performing Saturday and Sunday, and Saturday was our most free day. But we started running behind schedule. And as we drove towards the beach, we hit these huge traffic jams that were obviously a bunch of people headed to the beach trying to get their space established for the air show. And very quickly, so I was driving, but very quickly he said, oh, why don't we turn around and try again tomorrow? And I said, are you sure? And he's, yeah, you know, this is just, we got off to a late start. We're going to be, you know, who wants to sit in this traffic? It just sucks. Let's just turn around. So I did. I turned around. And then as we were driving a little bit further away, he saw these bicyclists heading towards the beach. And he said, hey, I wonder if this street leads towards a beach. We were quite far away from the center part of the where they were performing. But he said, what if we just take this street and see where it leads and see, like, let's just go have a beach day. Let's just go. We already have our cooler packed and our chair and our umbrella and our little sandwiches for the beach. Like, worst comes to worst, why don't we just go enjoy the beach for a little bit? So we totally did, found a parking spot, walked, you know, he was like, this is kind of far from the beach. I was like, that's okay. I need my steps in for today. You know, packed our little stuff up, went to the beach, sat down, and we just decided to plant. We were really far away from where they were performing, but we still got a really good show.
I'm sure you did.
They go so high and so far. And the place that they were taking off from was to our north. So while we didn't make it to the center where they were performing, they had to fly. Part of their circle was to fly by us to get to where they were performing. And it was incredible. And then it was over and we packed up our stuff and we went back, and it was like the coolest thing. And it was all because we were willing to change our original plan. And we were probably way more happy than if we had tried to just push through and fight all that traffic.
Well, you bring up a really interesting other rule. It's not actually in the 10 rules, and that's, you know, a good improv actor is afraid to fail. I mean, sorry, they're not afraid to fail. They're willing to make a mistake and then build on that. Mm-hmm. And then another additional rule. So now we'll have 12 rules today. In light of what you said, is sometimes distance is better.
Yes.
And you know, I've noticed this from a performance standpoint, particularly, you know, you go to a Cirque du Soleil show, for example.
Yes.
You can choose to sit right up close and personal and be in the actors' faces. I've done that.
Sure.
But you know what happens when you sit further back and you get to take in the whole everything?
Perspective.
And so it literally is one, just like you were saying, you really can't appreciate the Blue Angels or the Thunderbirds or any of these aerial stuff until you take a step back and you get to see everything. Mm-hmm. Because the people up close and personal to it, yeah, they get to feel the jet blast and the rumbling and the sonic booms are felt a little differently. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the reality is being further back not only is a sometimes better show, you get out easier.
Oh, yeah, we got home easier. We got out easier. Oh, and they did a flyby over our head and surprised the shit out of me. I yelled because they were coming from behind me and I wasn't expecting it. And I totally screamed. Everybody screamed. It was like, because it was their low, they do like this low flyby thing to scare, shock people. But the other way that, you know, having spent a large portion of the early parts of my life as a football coach's wife and also UCLA athletics and many, many, many games, is football is another example of that. It is so fun to be on the sidelines, which I have done many, many times, but to appreciate the game means you need a larger perspective, like to actually appreciate and see where the players are going and see the whole field. There is something about being higher up in the stadium where you get the perspective of the game and the movement of the players on the field that is harder to see when you're on the sidelines.
Well, and so in filmmaking, by the way, we call it an establishing shot. Oh. And you, Steven Spielberg is great with this, right? You get these big panoramic views and you suddenly realize where you are in the scene.
Yes.
So let's keep going for sake of time here. Number nine. Yes. Is what Pan Theater says for serious and emotional scenes. For our listeners, this is all of you, for every okay. scene in your life, focus on characters and relationships.
Oh, yes.
And that's what's going to drive the scene. How many of you instead focus on outcomes, results? Am I going to look stupid? You know, what are they going to think? It's no. If you will focus on the people involved, and mm-hmm. the relationship you have with them or they have with each other, it mm-hmm. leads to a greater ability to take things as they come.
Beautiful.
And then finally, number 10, again, they say it's for humorous scenes. I invite our listeners to apply this to everything. Take your choices to the extreme. Take it to the nth degree. And when you do that, you focus on actions and objectives. Right? Be willing to take risks. Be willing to take chances. And ultimately, by the way, with all of these, maybe this is a good way for us to kind of bring this to a close. And that's ultimately a good improv artist has a massive imagination. And they trust
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Right? So who would you be in a stressful situation if you used the difficulty and used your imagination to say, okay, life has kicked me in the gut. Mm-hmm. I'm sad, I'm angry, I'm this, I'm that. Okay, that's how you feel. Mm-hmm. This is where I was, what I'm faced with. How can I use that? How can I unleash my imagination to do that? And I think those are the skills that an improv artist can help all of our listeners with. So go out, look online. Most communities, by the way, have classes in improv. You mm-hmm. don't have to be a seasoned actor to do this. Go take mm-hmm. an improv class. As mm-hmm. scary as it sounds right now, mm-hmm. it will change you forever.
Wow. I really love that. I really love the practical application of these rules for life. Yes, and know where you are. Be willing to change. Be willing to fail. Sometimes distance is better. Focus on relationships. I mean, these are such important life lessons for so many things we face in today's world.
And go out and watch some of these great, I'll call them comedic actors, but these comedians and improv actors whose intent is to come into a scene that is strange to them mm-hmm. and make the best out of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, go, you know, Whose Line Is It Anyway? I love Nina Conti. She's a comedian and she has Monkey. And, you know, you think hysterical. That they come out with a preset script. Well, they've got tools. She's constantly interacting with the audience. There's no script for the audience.
Yeah.
It's a stream of consciousness that she's comfortable and confident with. So it's a great learning tool. All right, next week.
Wow.
Next week we are doing What Haunts You. Your past might be gaining on you. It's the day before Halloween, so we're going to have fun with the show. Mm-hmm. I think.
Who knows? Yes, and.
Yes, and. All right, anything you want to end on?
No. Today feels very, well, I didn't do a yes, and. I just did a no.
That's okay. We're at the end of the show. So even an actor needs to know when to take a bow.
And so I bow. Have a wonderful week, everybody.
Thanks for joining us. Again, remember to like, subscribe, and share this on your favorite platform. We'll see you all next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've reached the end of another episode of Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. If you like our show, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate our broadcast, and leave a review. The podcast is for general information only and not intended to be legal or mental health advice, nor the formation of a lawyer-client, nor therapist-patient relationship. Stay tuned for our next episode, and thank you for listening.